Greetings and welcome to the AVOD. I'm Cal Vargelon.
I'm DM.
And we're joined today by our very special meta correspondent.
I love the dramatic pause. Like, all right, is he going to fuck this up? And he going to say his name early? Or is he going to try and be cute and funny?
I never know. I never know what you're going to do.
It's Rob from Film Threat.
All right. And yes, we are here to talk about the new Scream movie. But first, I believe we have some random crap to address.
Starting with a video game, as usual.
Yeah, I know. I do play a lot of video games. This time, I want to tell everybody if they have a PSVR, which I know... Sorry, PSVR 2, which I know isn't that likely. It's not the most popular thing just yet, but I'm hoping it'll catch on. To grab themselves a copy of Switchback. I love those Dark Pictures games. And what they've done is they've taken all of the assets for the first season of Dark Pictures games and reused them to make a rail shooter. So literally, you're in VR on a roller coaster shooting at monsters and things as they fly by at high speeds. It is thrilling. So, it's entertaining. I can't get enough of this thing.
So it's just like the Dennis Quaid, Danny Glover
exactly movie? Like that. Yeah. Yes, it is a clear like adaptation of the movie Switchback.
Nice. Nice.
Could not be more exciting. I should have known you would remember that movie. Like, if anyone was going to remember the movie Switchback.
I know. That plays to an audience of two.
I know. And we're both here.
Right?
At one point, Jared Leto gives a man a tracheotomy with a pen. So, yeah.
Oh.
The first time I'd seen that in a movie. Then I saw it in 800 other movies.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Written by the first screenwriter on Die Hard.
That's right. That's right. Yep. Yeah.
All right. It was, of course, rewritten by Stephen E. D'Souza, who went on to Die Hard 2. But anyway, Switchback, magnificent. It's called that because in the UK, roller coasters were first called Switchback Railroads because they just went, you know, back and forth.
Interesting.
Yeah. All right. Next up, I believe we have some documentaries.
Sure.
We do.
Ooh.
Who's going first? We didn't talk about this.
No, we did not. So I'll go quickly.
Okay, please.
South by Southwest, it just premiered this past week, called The Ark to Oblivion.
Ooh.
It is, ARC to right. Oblivion. Although it is about a filmmaker who has all these external hard drives of his child growing up and family movies and so on and so forth. And he doesn't know what to do with them. So he decides to go on a quest to build an ark, a literal ark, on his parents' main farm to store all of these. But it sends him on the quest around the world to find out what is worth saving. And he gets into, you know, the what's saved inside of a limestone rock, to these ancient libraries in Saudi Arabia, talks. And of course, someone who knows not just about documentary films, but also land-based boats. But Werner Herzog stops in.
Land boats.
And gives his commentary on it. But it's in essence, you know, we think about all these things that we're uploading to the quote unquote cloud, and, you know, pictures fade, books jaundice. But what is it we're actually trying to save? What is it we're trying to say about ourselves to pass along to future generations? It is, and it's not as heavy as that sounds, even though it does get deep. He's the director, Ian Chaney, keeps everything very light, very fun and inquisitive. And I was fascinated by it. It was when I saw Fire of Love last year, I felt the same for this and this year, South by Southwest. I think this one's, we're going to be hearing about this at the end of the year.
Okay.
Interesting. Yep.
And is this watchable, like, is it in theaters right now? Is it online now?
It just premiered. It just had its premiere at South by Southwest. Okay. So I don't know. It may get, it got picked up by the same company who produced Fire of Love. So I would expect a rollout of some sort in, you know, art house theaters for a little while. And then probably a good streaming service.
All right. That's exciting. I'll be sure to check it out. Next up, we have another documentary.
Well, a documentary series, I suppose. Ooh. A limited series, as Netflix likes to call it. I watched that one about the Murdoch murders.
Yeah.
Which I had like, it sort of, I guess, existed kind of on like the periphery of like my sphere of knowledge about true crime. I'd sort of heard it mentioned maybe once or twice before. So I turned it on, and what an insane, crazy story.
Yeah, the same thing happened to me. I mean, except for me, it was even more obscure. I hadn't heard about this thing at all.
Okay.
For all of the years it was happening, and then the trial started, and news about it was everywhere, and I'm like, how did I miss this story?
Yeah, yeah.
And so
yeah.
I got caught up on all of the details in the past 3 weeks, and I'm like, every part of this is crazier than the last.
It's like the Menendez brothers and O.J. Simpson. I mean, it's just this insane.
Except it's so bizarre.
If O.J. Simpson's career, instead of being a famous running back, had been a guy who just like stole money from disabled people.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Well, it was a famous lawyer. I mean, we can't. It's the reason why he got away with it for so long.
Well, no, that's true. But it's like all of his money came from just stealing settlements from disabled people. It's crazy.
It's disgusting. Yep. Yeah.
Wow. Oh, my God.
He should run for Senate.
Well, that's how Rick Scott
that
got there.
Walk. Also, I don't know if you caught that little bit of.
I didn't.
News in air quotes.
Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a bonkers story. How does the, how much detail does the Netflix documentary go into?
I mean, it's pretty detailed. They speak with everybody who was on that boat.
Nice.
And, like, a few other people. It's good. Like, you get a lot of history about the family.
Yeah.
And I'm still, is the man's name, the eldest son, is his name actually Buster?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Because they keep going, his grandpa Buster, who he was named after. And I'm like, named after or nicknamed after?
No, because the grandfather's nickname was Buster. His real name was, like, I don't know, William or something. I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. Is he named after the grandfather's nickname? Or is that just also has the same nickname?
I think his name might, on his birth certificate, might actually be Buster. And that is unfortunate for him.
Yeah. Wow.
Oh, okay. No, it's Richard Alex.
Oh, okay.
It is.
Richard Alex Murdoch.
So he is named directly after his grandfather, and they just use the same nickname.
Buster.
Well, thank God. So yeah, because no one was confirming that for me. And in all
and
the documentaries.
It's just Buster. Anyway,
it's like, I honestly felt like I was going crazy. Like, does everyone know this? And I'm a stupid person for asking, like when I was watching a documentary about Patty Hearst and no one would say what the word Symbionese meant. I'm like, are we all just supposed to know what Symbionese means?
Right.
Why aren't you telling me why they're called the Symbionese Liberation Army? I need to know this. Like, I shouldn't have to look it up after I watch the documentary. That's all I'm saying.
And for homework.
Oh, right? God. Ridiculous. But okay, so Netflix one is decent. I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, decent. I recommend it. I think it's 3 or 4 episodes. I don't remember. So it's not like too much of a time commitment there. It has a pretty, like, the very last line is really good. It ends, like, it doesn't really have an ending because he's in prison and it's before the trial. But the way it ends is quite good.
Okay. I thought you were going to say it sets it up for a sequel.
That would be amazing. Are they going to do that thing like Tiger King where they do an extra episode now that he's been found guilty and gone to jail?
Probably, and they'll probably have another one coming out because he just announced his bid for presidency.
Oh my God.
Yep.
Oh, Tiger King running for president again. Dude. Just get, like, you're not getting any more attention. Just accept it. There are more colorful criminals out there.
No way.
We've already drug the dollar through that trailer park 4 years ago or 6 years ago.
God.
So,
oh, so deeply not cool. And that's why I love it. All right. Let's move on to our next topic, which is a quiz.
Yay.
Mm-hmm. All right. Who's ready to feel real good about themselves?
I am.
Bring it.
This guy.
All right, here's more. Okay, what I did was, we're having this weird problem the past couple of times where I just take the top three cards off the deck, and they didn't sort these well, so we would end up with a lot of questions about the same movies.
Right, right.
So I've gone randomly through the deck for these three.
Okay.
And I may shuffle it before next week. All right.
All right.
Who hosted the original Twilight Zone series?
Rod Serling?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Robert Englund plays Freddy Krueger in which franchise?
Oh, my God.
I told you.
Scream Halloween.
I know. Which film had the iconic tagline, "I see dead people"?
Sixth Sense.
That's right. Which movie contains a scene in which a father chases his son around a hedge maze with an axe?
The Shining.
Which 2016...
It is St. Patrick's Day.
It is. Oh. That's true. What 2016 film is about... Well, no, that would be more appropriate if it was Scotchtoberfest.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Sorry.
What 2016 film is about a deaf writer who gets stalked by a masked killer in a house in the woods?
Hush.
That's correct. Hush.
Great movie. Sweet
Charlotte.
Such a good movie.
It's fantastic.
What actor plays the character, the main character Jim Halsey in the 1986 movie The Hitcher?
Rutger Howard.
No, The Hitcher.
Oh, Jim Halsey, Thomas Howell. Howell.
That's correct. C. Thomas Howell. All right. If we're going by each of you, it's 5 for 6 and 6 for 6. But as a team, you all got 6 for 6. So woo! Congratulations. Yeah.
Always a team.
Exactly. All right. Next up, I believe we have a list.
We do have a list. So today's list comes to us from Bloody Disgusting.
Ooh.
And it is the 6 of the best horror movies set in New York City.
Oh, okay. Vampire in Brooklyn, duh. Move on, keep going.
Yeah, that's your calling number one right now.
Vampire in Brooklyn. No question. Vampire in Brooklyn. All my money on Vampire in Brooklyn for number one. All
right. We are counting down from number 6.
Okay.
I'm assuming it's a countdown.
Okay.
And we begin with a movie I didn't realize was actually set in New York City.
What?
1408.
I didn't know that.
Neither did
I. I thought
that
was in some like small town.
I thought it was Chicago or something. Yeah.
No, I knew it was a town because it was big enough to have like, you know, a 14-story hotel. But
wasn't it a quaint little kind of...
No, like, no. It was just a really old hotel from like the 30s.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I had no idea it was in New York though. I mean, I assumed it was in New England because, you know, Stephen King.
Right? Stephen King. Yeah.
All right. 1408. Okay. Nice.
All right. After that, number 5 is... Frankenhooker.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, no, very New York movie. That's fair.
No, but it's not the most New York movies.
It's
horror movies set in New York.
I know. Yeah. I'm just saying that's a very New York kind of movie because it's grimy.
The best horror movie.
No, probably not.
No.
Like should it be on the list.
No joking. Maybe the best horror movie set in New York is Quetzalcoatl, Cue the Winged Serpent.
Oh. But,
like that's not gonna make the list.
No love for Mimic?
Mimic's really good too, and that might be on the list.
Yeah,
so good.
All right, let's go. But no, I just love Q. I think it's amazing.
Number 4. Yeah. Oh, Maniac Cop.
Yeah, we. Oh, wait.
Oh, nice.
88.
Maniac better be on there.
Oh yeah, Maniac really needs to be.
Maniac Cop.
That was
the fake version of the. Yeah, and they all like actually walked around the real Son of Sam places and did the shoot.
Yeah, Tom Savini. You had Joe Spinelli
in
there.
Such a gross movie.
It's a gross, greasy movie. It drips early or late 70s,
early 80s, kind of New York. Yeah. All right. Next up.
Okay, number 3, Midnight Meat Train.
Oh, it's a pretty New York movie.
Every time this comes up, I always say the same thing. I wanted it to be better than it is.
Yeah, that's fair.
You could say that for pretty much all of Clive Barker's adaptations.
Yeah, right? Anyway, long story short, there's a bunch of giant Lovecraft monsters who live underneath the subway, and they run New York, and you got to feed them meat every night. You know, that's the movie. Just accept it. Let's keep going.
Okay. Number 2, Jacob's Ladder.
God, that doesn't feel like it was new. No. I mean,
that could be anywhere because it's such a weird dreamscape.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like there's nothing characteristically New York about Jacob's Ladder.
No, it just says shot on location in New York City. That's nice.
Now, you want New York to be like part of the experience?
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I get what you're saying. I don't think that belongs on the list.
Okay, number one. I'm taking bets for number one.
It still could be Mimic.
Sticking
with one of two. I'm thinking either. Well, no. Come on. The most iconic one, King Kong.
Yeah, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if they're considering that a horror movie.
Well, but Cloverfield, I would say.
Okay. Yeah.
Because that's got.
I would still like it to be Mimic, but that's me.
But that's a monster movie, I guess. So.
Ooh, you know. I'm going to go on a limb. Relic.
Oh, nice one.
Personal favorite.
I know, right?
So bad.
Just iconic New York location. Oh, wait, I'm going to say something crazy. You ready for something crazy? Ghostbusters.
I know. I was thinking that too, actually, but I was like, it's on the air of comedy.
Yeah, I know. It's still a horror movie, though. That's a scary movie.
It is.
How about Chud?
Oh, Chud. God, there's so many good New York horror movies. Why is it only a six list?
Because this is because the I didn't read the entire title. The whole title was Before Scream 6. Six of the best horror movies.
Okay.
Set in New York. Okay, there you go.
Okay, so number one, are you ready for this?
Of course.
It's Mimic.
Yes!
Yeah, right!
Woo!
All right, I'll take it.
Mimic
shot in Toronto.
Yes, but still.
But still, look more
about New York
than
that's
Scream 6.
Nice.
Which was shot in Montreal.
Montreal is hell, that movie.
So I'll tell you a story just because it came up.
Okay.
So I'm in the movie theater. I'm watching the credits. I'm like, oh man, there are a lot of French names in these credits. And so Nikki turns around and looks at me. She's like, because it was shot in Montreal. We had a whole conversation about this and you were really upset. I must have forgotten.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. Yeah, Montreal doesn't get to double for New York that much. Like, so
yeah, there's a reason why.
Yeah, it doesn't look at all like, yeah.
Yeah.
I will always remember the Wesley Snipes movie, Art of War, and I'm like, okay, that doesn't look like New York at all. I live in Montreal, and I've been to New York, and this is bad, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. No, but still, I'm really glad to see Mimic get on the list. That's fantastic. Because Toronto is basically New York 2.0 is when it comes to movie making. So I'm glad to see that recognized.
Speaking of city life.
I know. The hassles of... Well, I live directly. There's a bridge next to my house. And the other side of that bridge is a fire station. So there you go. All right. So yeah, I got to say, New York, it really does seem like a lot of great horror movies are set there. Is that something do you think is going to keep happening?
Most likely, but I can't say for absolute sure because this next upcoming horror movie is called Nefarious.
Ooh.
Wasn't that
and I don't know where it's set.
The title of what?
No, I said, wasn't that a title to the Duran Duran album back in the 80s? That
I
was
have no idea.
Notorious, I'm sorry.
Oh, never mind. Okay.
Okay, so here we go. On the day of his scheduled execution, a convicted serial killer gets a psychiatric evaluation during which he claims he is a demon and further claims that before their time is over, the psychiatrist will commit three murders of his own.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Exciting. So we got a Mr. Frost Fallen type situation going on.
Right.
I suppose, but I thought this was interesting. It says here that this film is a prequel to two novels.
I'm so confused by what that means.
So there are two books. One called The Nefarious Plot, and the other's called The Nefarious Carol. And apparently this movie is a prequel.
To those
books.
Okay.
I've never heard of either of these books.
Interesting. I just think the idea of having a prequel movie.
Oh, totally. It is.
Yeah.
A couple of books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are the books available? Or like
probably.
These are planned books?
No. So Nefarious Plot was published in 2016 and Nefarious Carol was published in 2020.
Yeah, see, I didn't know that part.
So they're just kind of reimagining what would take place.
Before
I wonder if it's the same, is the same writer?
It's not.
Oh, wow.
It's not.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Okay, I am suddenly very interested. Would we recognize anyone involved in this thing?
Sean Patrick Flannery.
Well, obviously.
That name ring a bell?
We all know Sean Patrick Flannery. As I call him, Young Indiana Jones. He'll always be Young Indiana Jones to me.
I don't know if he's a serial killer or the psychiatrist.
Either way, I'd be happy to see him. All right. That's a kind of a cool idea. Okay. So let's move on to what we're really here to talk about. A little movie about screaming for a sixth time.
Goodness, that's a lot of screaming.
It really is.
It is.
Okay. So after the survive, let me start all over. I just completely messed that up. After surviving their ordeal in Woodsboro, the Core Four are living large in New York. That is until Ghostface shows up and starts killing folks.
Dude, that dude cannot stop ghost facing.
Nope.
It's ridiculous.
Ghostface's got a face.
All right. So are we going to assume, because a lot of the conversation is going to be, I think, you know, about plot mechanics. So we're going to assume people have seen this film, right?
Let's hope
sure.
so.
Okay.
Or not. Haven't, just or not. Go see the movie and right. then come back here.
Yeah.
Or don't. And skip this episode entirely.
We think you'll enjoy our conversation, though, if you have.
You don't have to skip the episode entirely. You can skip the movie entirely.
Oh,
well, that's what I'm saying.
Damn.
Did I show my hand too quickly?
You did. Bravo. Okay, so Scream 6 is, of course, a direct follow-up to Scream 5, which did a couple of fun and interesting things. We talked about it here on the show. Mm-hmm. You can listen to that if you'd like to. This one is in a very, like, weird, well, like, obvious way. I mean, it does a few of its own things, but it is really directly trying to be Scream 2 to that movie's Scream.
That's exactly it.
And you hate Scream 2.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
And it's my favorite Scream movie, still to this day.
So does that mean this is your second favorite Scream movie?
No, this film has some problems. Bunch of problems. So I'll bring up my first question, which is, when did you know what was going on? Immediately or sooner?
Right.
As soon as the roommate was like, ever since we lost our brother, I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that makes you the brother of Jack Quaid from the first movie, which means that has to be Jack Quaid's dad. And since
we
Scream
all go
2,
home now.
And it as was soon the mother, as he mentions Jack, get that file on the FBI agent for me. I was like, okie doke. There we go.
But yeah, it could not have been clearer who the villains were this time.
I will start off with a positive, though.
Yeah.
That props for getting a film made in 10 months to this scale.
Oh, yeah. It's a big movie.
It is. I mean, I'm not saying they take advantage of its quote unquote New York location, but in less than a year to turn that around, that, I mean, that to me is impressive.
You know, all the street scenes, like big locations, huge set pieces, like it's
there's
very
some nice
impressive
set pieces in there. Yeah. The ladder sequence in particular.
Oh yeah. Like that looks really good.
Although, like you say that, and I felt this way when I was watching the movie, I'm like, for a movie that's set in New York, which, like, it's not the world's biggest city, I'm like, this movie is very claustrophobic.
Yes.
Everything, it's all indoors. Yes. Everything about this movie is inside, in small apartments.
Yep.
And it just, I'm like, this is
or
just
theaters
weird.
Or cop
or
stations.
Or a theater. And I'm like, is it a commentary on how crowded New York is? Or is it just because, like, these are just the constraints of making this movie?
Yeah,
I would say more the constraints in all likelihood.
Right.
If they couldn't afford Neve Campbell, then they probably couldn't afford New York.
They couldn't afford. But I'm like, I did enjoy it. I'm like, this is really interesting. And I think you could do really interesting things with this idea if this were a different movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole thing. Like, even at the ending, as it's set in a theater, I'm like, you know, you could have been on Broadway at that point. You could have played a little with the pandemic angle and the claustrophobic nature of the streets of New York City. I don't know. There's a lot of different things that they could have done, except the obligatory subway scene that, as inventive as it is, still no. I'm sorry. I go to New York a couple times every year, but they do not. The lights do not blink off like that. Ever.
I know. That was a weird thing to suddenly have happen.
Yeah.
One thing that bothered me about the subway scene is, like, I've missed people on the subway. I've gotten on a train, and do you know what those people invariably do? They do the same thing everyone does. The people in the first train get off at the next stop, and they wait for you.
Yep.
Like, that's just what everyone does.
Yeah. Unless you're going to, like, Coney Island or something, then yes, yeah, like exactly.
It's just polite. And you guys want to stay together because of a murder that's going, active murder.
Well, they texted each other, so they're in touch.
I know, but that's not enough, obviously. Oh.
No, especially not since since she hates the dude that she's stuck with.
I know, right?
Right, yeah.
Hates and is 100% right to be suspicious of. But that said, he is the guy who had the most obscure Halloween costume and therefore the one I love the most.
Yeah.
He was dressed as the guy from Murder Party.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, yes. I loved that. Yes, I loved that so was good. Much.
There's so, I mean, I will say one fun thing about this being set at Halloween, which is weird for a movie that comes out in February, but, you know, whatever, is that so many nerd costume choices.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of love the sheer volume of nerdy costume choices. Not just the murder party. Watching the Babadook coming around. Watching, like, the girl from Midsommar, and then right behind her, the bear costume from Midsommar walking together. Like, all of these weird, cute, obscure costumes. I thought that was really fun.
And that's probably a testament. I mean, you could tell from the previous one. I wasn't the biggest fan of it, but I could tell that they certainly appreciated the horror culture.
Oh, these are horror nerds making.
They
these
are
things.
Completely.
Absolutely.
And I'm a big fan of Ready or Not.
Oh,
so.
God. Yeah.
I want to talk about the horror nerds. Please. So.
Yes. Yes.
I mentioned this on a previous episode. We had this conversation about, like, horror gatekeeping and how it's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie fucking does that. And it drives me insane.
I see.
Like, horror is so big, and there's so much about it. You don't have to, like, prove your horror cred to one another.
But
especially when you got two women talking to each other about their love of horror movies. It's like, this is the thing dudes do. Because I've had it happen to me.
Yeah.
And it just, like, it just bothered me so much.
I get it.
Like, there are, you know, okay, there are rules to surviving a horror movie. Does that mean there's also rules to which horror movies are good and which ones you're allowed to like if you're claimed to be, like, a horror nerd? And it's just like, it's just, well, that kind of shit just drives me crazy.
Not only did they mention that with that Mindy's Jamie Kennedy update and where she talks about that, but the beginning, the opening sequence, which is usually, you know, one of the foundations of a Scream franchise, and you feature Samara Weaving, perfect choice, great. She's a film professor who knows about the trappings of the genre and proceeds to just move right along with them, despite her knowledge of it. And it just didn't match. She sounded so savvy, but yet made all the stupid rookie mistakes. I didn't get that.
That said, I think that in that situation, unlike in previous ones, it's not like she had any reason to suspect she was in a horror movie type of situation. There weren't killings going on. The guy on the phone wasn't being menacing. Hey, when he was on the phone, was that David Arquette?
That's what I was wondering too.
Sounded like David Arquette, right?
I have no idea. Okay. I don't know. I couldn't tell you.
But still, it's a blind date. She wanders down a...
considering the movie that she's in, and considering everyone else in this movie knows they're in a horror movie to the point where they can't stop talking about it.
Right.
Then she should be more self-aware. Not even, like, fuck a horror movie. You're on a blind date. You tell everyone you know that you're going on a blind date.
Absolutely.
With some random dude that you met on Tinder. Like, you have, emails prepped and ready to go if you don't log in at a certain time.
Yeah,
like,
so walking into an alley does seem quite a choice.
Like, pull your head out of your ass. What the fuck are you doing?
That said, I did really enjoy the payoff for that opening. I do enjoy it following the killer and going back to the killer's apartment. I think that was a nice, audacious change. They didn't earn it with the Samara Weaving death, you're right, but following the killer and then having him get murdered, I think was a really nice choice.
So, when the killer took off his mask, I was like, what am I in for? This is so new.
Yeah, but how cool was it that
I don't
it
know
was...
if I like it.
Flash Thompson from Spider-Man's.
I was thinking Gustav from Grand Budapest.
Either way.
But, like, it's something different, it's something new, it's a sixth one, we're branching out, we're in New York.
Yeah.
Like, none of the rules don't matter anymore.
Yeah.
And then it was like a Scream 4 thing all over again where the killer gets killed. And the movie stopped being interesting.
Wait, the killer gets killed in Scream 4?
At the beginning of Scream 4, that has all
when they do the movie.
No, those are just a bunch of fake ass.
All those movies.
Yeah, those are just a bunch of fake ass. That's not really the same.
Stab movies.
No, but you know what I mean? It's the same idea.
Yeah.
Well, no,
it's like,
I mean,
it's coming from the same place. The
I see what you're saying. Okay.
Meta commentary, if you like.
It is. But yeah, and also, I will say this again. I mean, to people like us, it was perfectly obvious who did it right away. But I did like that there were plenty of clues, and I mean, that made it impossible to not know who the killer is. Again, but like, the minute her roommate shows up on screen, I'm like, oh you're definitely the killer. There's no way you're not the killer.
Yeah.
But they put plenty of evidence there, so it's completely fair, and in ways that they hadn't really done in the past. Like, it's a mystery that plays fair. Like, you watch Scream 3, right? And the only clues about who the killer is are that the girl playing Sydney is now the killer, but that got taken out of the movie during editing. So now there are no clues to who the killer is in that movie.
Right.
And here there are actually like clear clues. There's a track. You can follow it. You can pay attention. You can know who did it before you get to the end of the movie. And I like that.
I think part of what like made Scream so much fun for people was that you didn't know. And it is a mystery. And you have to keep track of where people are and who's talking to who. And okay, the movie cheats with the size of the killer.
Oh, yeah.
This movie, it does something even worse. The stuff happens in this movie that's purely for the audience. And it's just a waste of time.
Well, and that's therein lies the biggest, I guess, flaw of the most recent ones is the death of Wes Craven. I mean, you know, look at how Scream 4, however you feel about it today or at the time, was so ahead of its time in dealing with the impact of internet culture, you know, the nonstop news cycle, one generation's tragedy is another generation's joke, all of that. I mean, he actually, you know, he was the one who founded legacy sequels, essentially, with that movie. I mean,
completely.
So there was so much more. It went so much more in depth into the psychology of it than just the passing fads of the genres.
Yeah, and I think by making it just what was Jack Quaid's character's name?
Richie.
Just making it Richie's family wants revenge.
Yeah,
it kind of like it makes it so this film isn't able to have anything really to say about media, which is supposed to be the bread and butter. Like, say what you will about Scream 2, that is the one that is the one that kicks off the whole idea that her personal tragedy has been commodified.
Right.
And that becomes a theme for the rest of the series. And Scream 2 is what kicks all of that off.
And this Billy Loomis was a character that we got to know in the first one.
Absolutely.
The mere fact that you were like, what was this kid's name again? Richie something or other? You know,
it's a
like,
problem.
Yeah, it is.
It is. He wasn't such a memorable character that you want a whole movie dealing with the aftermath of his
the grief.
Death.
Yeah.
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 Like with people dealing with the grief over his death in a pretty strange way, I would say. Pretty.
Yeah. If the dad was so grief stricken, then he's of his child being killed. Then he's like, you know what? I'm going to enlist my other children, my remaining children, to come help me with this.
An elaborate murder scheme.
And that's kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about like the movie's opening. It's like it just sort of broke from convention.
Yeah.
And the movie talks about it being a part of a franchise now, and it has different rules. But then the movie still like is holding on to this idea that like everything has to be connected, and Ghostface always has to be connected to Woodsboro in some kind of weird way.
Yeah.
It's like, we don't need to do that anymore. You just told us that you don't have to do this.
It's like, if you just want revenge for your
Haddonfield.
and if you just want revenge for your dead son. Why the obsession with theming it after all of the other Scream murders?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was your son's thing. Like, is it just a way to keep his memory? I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that's I wasn't a big fan of 5 or Scream as it's retitled, whatever. But at least there was enough time that had lapsed between the fourth and the fifth. You know, we had the rise of elevated horror. The legacy sequels were now things. So it had topics to cover. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's not enough that has transpired between the 10 months of this last one and this one to make any sort of you know, aside from just obligatory references, there's not much commentary that can be said about, you know, the evolution of horror films. It hasn't evolved that much.
Well, and the thing is, they try to broach the idea of the thing we want to talk about this is what does it mean when a thing stops being a story and starts being a franchise?
Right.
But in
right.
order to do that, you would have to meaningfully look into the history of the franchise and all of the characters in the franchise in a way that, like, the film isn't interested in doing.
Yeah.
Because it's not really interested in any of the previous films, who those characters are, why they did the things they did. I mean, having Kirby back was fun, but it's like they didn't really get into what this meant for her in a meaningful way because she's barely in the movie.
Yeah.
And I think, like, if the movie were smart enough, it's like that right there could be just an interesting commentary on franchises and then film, not academia, but people who just like love horror movies, because the movie, it references the past movies, but it doesn't have anything interesting to say about it, and it can't internalize any of that stuff to become its own movie, to stand on its own. It's like, well, that could be a really interesting commentary just about, not horror
collector's culture,
but like,
you know, that whole thing at the end, like you were saying, DM, is that these glass enshrined old Scream costumes or Stab costumes, whatever.
Well, no, they're supposed to be the actual
stuff
the killers wore.
The artifacts that are all from there. Yeah. All of that could be huge. You could have a great commentary, just like the other one did on like Reddit and fan service and so on and so forth. This one could have said, hey, look, collector's culture, you know, making sure that it was signed by the original Stabber or whatever.
Yeah.
But you could really kind of dig into that and make a comment on it. But it just used it for window dressing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, why not address like the culture? And it's weird because I hate to say it, but I feel like the killers at the beginning might have been more interesting than the killers they went with.
Well, they were trying to make some movie that we don't ever get to learn about.
Yeah, they're trying to kill. Right. Well, they're trying to finish Richie's movie. And it's like, you could have done a ton, like, because everyone knows that what Scream 5 was about was toxic fan culture.
Yeah.
And you could have used this to dig into how that never goes away and how it's like all that you can do with these online communities, you can't fight against it. You can just now become the focus of the toxic fan culture. And that's what gets interrupted by the much more pedestrian, a family wants revenge for Richie's death. And it's like you're giving up a chance for something that might have something to say. Because I watched this whole movie and I don't know that it has anything to say.
No. No, I don't feel like it does. It doesn't have anything to do with Survivor's Guild. And honestly, you know, I don't think Nev Campbell is a super dynamic actress, but I think she's wonderful in these series. And I think this is where she's sorely missed.
Yeah.
Because not only do we have nothing to say, but then you've got that Sam, who is essentially our protagonist in this, she's not given anything to do. I mean, she's just kind of the naggy older sister who helicopters around and tases guys in the nuts, and that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't let it become her story in a meaningful way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No.
And having Sydney in there at least would have kind of elevated or taken some of that, you know, oxygen. I don't know. But it
would have anchored it because she's an anchor.
Yeah. Yeah, she really is.
She's
right
there.
Right. More so than Gale Weathers. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. No, she's been there from the start. And now we've got this weird situation where the only people who've been in every Scream movie are Gale and Roger Jackson.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Who, it's so weird seeing him like in the end credits when he's like just a voice. And so they put his name over the killer, which is a stuntman.
Yeah.
Such a weird thing to do.
Yeah.
I get it, though. But it's like, you want to give credit to this guy who's such an integral part of the franchise and is just a voice. But it is a weird way to have a man get credited.
Really is.
Yeah. No, and I think Sydney, it would have helped them push it in a different direction that might have been more about, well, what happens to the characters when a franchise, when, you know, a series becomes a franchise. And of course, the franchise already happened with Scream, the TV show. Like, they're not, like, this isn't a new area they're treading, because there was the Scream TV show that already addressed, well, what happens when you franchisize what is once a story now becomes a template. Yeah. And weirdly, that's not something the Scream, I mean, I didn't watch the third season, but that's not something the Scream TV show ever grappled with, which is too bad, because that would have been really fertile ground. And it could have been fertile ground for this, but again, they just did something really pedestrian. It's like, well, what if there is all of these toxic fans who want to turn it into this franchise? So it's like, you could have all of these killers that don't even have a connection to one another. Yeah. Because they're all sharing the motivation of the community. It's not about personal things anymore. It's about, well, trying to kill the survivors of Scream movies or Stab movies or the real life stories, you know, that inspired it, is just what people do when they're a certain kind of psycho.
Yeah.
Make it about incel communities. Make it about, you know, online radicalization. You know, even go harder on the first one, on the fifth one's message.
Exactly.
Rather than backing away from it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, and I know this is not important, but I spent the entire movie being blown away by just how short that girl is.
She's so tiny. Yeah.
Like, it's so weird. Like, distractingly tiny.
When Hayden Panettiere comes in and she's shorter than that, you know.
Like,
that
there's, you know, my she's shorter than Hayden Panettiere? What? I know that's, I mean, it's nothing against Jenna Ortega. She's fine. She was great in X, you know, like, nothing wrong with the character. It's just that she is so tiny compared to everybody else that she feels like, oh, you can't hold your own at all in this. I can't believe you could survive a second you're so tiny.
That's the other thing too with this film. I feel like, okay, so the Scream Killers always, or Ghostface has always been fast moving, but
yeah.
I mean, he is particularly violent in here.
Oh yeah.
And the stabbings that some of these actors take and yet still are able to kind of amble around or you know, and I'm like, it really defied any.
Like, a woman gets stabbed in the stomach and then has the knife pulled up. Like, 6 inches up her chest, and then she's walking around and crawling across a ladder. I'm like, how are you alive?
No, she should be dead on the floor.
Yeah, her innards would have been falling out through the ladder rungs.
Absolutely. Or show me that. Like,
or show me that. Or show me that. On,
right. Right.
The desperate, you know, fight to stay alive, but she's got a hole in her guts and cry.
No, that one was kind of a stretch. I didn't understand the layout of their building the first time, so I was really confused when it turned out that her boyfriend from across the hall, across the window, was actually lived in the same building as they did.
Yes.
Yeah.
That really confused me. But yeah, they have those U-shaped buildings. I've never lived in one, so it wasn't something that I first associated with.
No, I've seen
and
them before.
Really?
I just know they exist.
Talk about, I mean, what... There's another wasted potential. Like, make him somewhat interesting, not some like dude bro from the gym who carries around a six pack of Coors Light with him.
But he's like the best character, quite honestly. Cute guy from across the way. Like, he is.
Yeah, but
like,
give him a personality.
Yeah.
He is. He's like, he's a good.
He's just friendly and supportive all the time. But like,
friendly
maybe
and
throw
supportive.
A little...
He's got a clear head on his shoulders. He tells her not to trust anybody, including himself. He's like not playing any mind games with her. Like, way to go, cute guy.
He is surprisingly nice. But the weird part is, I think you could totally have doubled down on how suspicious it is that he's that supportive and make people not she spends the whole movie new Randy spends the whole movie not trusting the weird guy because he's so weird. But how hilarious would it be if she had like been okay with the weird guy and spent the whole movie not trusting the super supportive, level-headed guy?
Yeah, the super duper nice guy.
Unbelievably nice, good looking guy who's incredibly supportive.
That would have been way more interesting.
Like, yeah. Like, no, you're too good to
already
be
true. A better movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know we're just following up on our conversation with about Valentine last month, but it would have been great. Valentine, better than you remember, but bad ending. Better than you remember, but a real bad ending on that movie. But yeah, like that would have been more interesting. Because it's like, you know, dig down on the fact that, no, he is too good to be true. He is cartoonishly nice and supportive.
No, yes. I want a character like that, though, because we don't get that anymore.
Oh, no, but it would be fun if, like, the character... But see, what you're saying is stuff the Randy character should have been saying about him.
Yeah, exactly.
That would have been interesting. Yeah. It's like, no. Yeah, like,
instead, she talks like some robot that she just, like, read out of throwaway, you know, fan fiction of Scream. Oh, it was just horrible.
Especially when it's like, yeah, the weird part is, I know you want to have something to say about franchises, but we're really kind of breaking new territory. Because, you know, it's like this, people really don't know what the world of franchise horror is yet. So try and figure out, look at the Bates Motels. You know?
Yeah, there you go.
Look at the world of fan films. Like, and by the way, that's something you really could have addressed given Richie's filmmaking and all that.
Perfect. Totally. That's that would have been way more interesting.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like fan films, guys.
There you go.
And like that's deciding their own continuity. That's where you should have gone with this.
Yes.
Oh, it's so frustrating because they're like, Richie liked to make his own movies. Oh, you're trying to say something about you finishing his fan film? No, they just wanted to have a bunch of footage playing on the screen in the background.
Yeah.
A lot of it being like actual footage of young Jack Quaid.
Yeah, exactly.
Which was kind of weird.
That was the same thing when they put the serial killer list on there. There were all these like headshots of them smiling.
I know.
When they're stitched together, I was like, couldn't you at least gotten one where they were like, you know, I don't know, in some disheveled manner, but it looked like all the 8x10 glossies that you
all
hand
the headshots
studio heads.
Of everybody, yeah.
Yeah.
It is weird that like the big fan thing, the big Scream Nerd fan thing last time was to finally get a confirmed cast list for the movie Stab, which I really appreciated.
Right.
Yeah.
And this time the big Scream Nerd fan thing was teasing us about whether or not Matthew Lillard is still alive or not.
Oh yeah.
They keep screwing with us.
He's dead.
But they don't want to commit to that for some reason. And I don't know
why. Maybe that's just because Kirby, like, I always assumed Kirby survived because you see her get stabbed, you don't see her die.
Right.
So the assumption was that she made
that she survived.
It.
Yeah.
But so that might be the whole
Sorry, confirmed in five that he survived. And then now they're doing that, like his head was crushed. But then they have the new killer get killed with his head being crushed.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, it seems like that's a pretty definitive statement about Stu.
He got stabbed in the mouth.
I know.
That's pretty brutal.
You should have just left it at that. You didn't need him to come back for your one last scare.
Yeah, they just love doing that in these.
Leave it alone.
Don't you? One of the other things that bothered me with it is that, although I liked the scene in that tiny grocery store, I felt like, given the closed quarters, again, another closed quarters, they at least maximized it. It felt good and tense. But having Ghostface pick up a gun and start shooting just really broke the mold. I mean, the gun is used as the last act payoff for the final girl.
Yeah, for the showdown every time.
Right. And just having him pick that up, it just, I don't know.
And it didn't feel right for the character, because here's the thing. There's always in one of these movies, a scene where your ghost face comes after their ultimate target at the start of the movie.
Right.
And we have always had to assume that like he was always just trying to scare and intimidate them.
Right.
Right. To lead up to the grand finale. But here, like, were you not going to shoot them with that shotgun? Like, I don't understand. What was your plan after you picked up that shotgun?
Right, exactly.
Maybe he did intend to shoot them, but he ran out of shells because I was counting.
Well, no, but my point is, like, what happens to, spoiler alert, you know, the cop if he shoots them right then?
Yeah.
Like, there goes his entire plan?
Right, exactly.
I guess the movie gets to be over that much sooner for the most of us.
Yeah.
No, but it's like, and what frustrated me, because it was the, because
but
it was
the guys.
But we
don't actually know what the whole plan was for this stupid family.
And we don't know who that killer was at that point.
It's so haphazard. It's like, okay, you got three of them running around trying to scare people, but also killing people.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, you killed her therapist immediately after she just told him about who she really is. It's a really bad therapist, by the way.
Oh, he's the worst. Henry Cherney is the worst therapist.
What is your goal? What is your, like, I don't understand what your end game is. What are you driving towards?
Well, yeah. They imply, and here's the weird part, right?
Like, you
the
never
implication
get
is well, no, that they were going to frame her for all the crimes.
And they are being manipulated into being at a certain place in a certain time so that they can be killed in a very certain way. You never get that.
Well, we're told that his plan was to make it look like Sam had done all the murders. Right? No, he says that's what his plan was, to make it look like Sam had done all the murders. But that's like, it doesn't in any way make sense with all of the other stuff we've seen up until this point.
Yeah. And given the fact that you're showing us in this movie, there are scenes in this movie that are only there solely for the audience. Like when he asks to see the file on Kirby, it's like the only payoff for that is a lie that he tells later in the movie. He didn't need to ask for the file.
Right.
The whole stabbing on the subway, that's only for our benefit.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, what's the point?
Yep.
There's no way.
Yeah, no, it is definitely an issue. Mm. And I don't understand why he doesn't kill her, or why she doesn't, the roommate doesn't kill her on the subway. Like, that part puzzled me. Because she has the ability to kill her just then, but she purposefully only does a stab to get her hospitalized.
Yeah.
And I mean, if the goal was to make it so there were fewer people at the showdown, right, to minimize people so they're easier to control, that's great. But the other, and it's like, if the guy on the train needs to get her to the hospital and you've minimized the number of people at showdown, great, but he's a killer too.
Yeah.
No, I think his intention was to kill her and she didn't die because he sucks at murder.
Well, no, it was the roommate who stabbed her. He didn't stab her. The roommate did.
It was a girl.
Yeah. It was Quinn who stabbed her on the subway because he never puts on the costume. And when she's been stabbed, he does that big, oh my God, I can't believe I'm so surprised you got stabbed.
Yeah.
I thought he did it. I thought he put on the costume, stabbed her, and then took off the costume and acted surprised.
No.
For our benefit.
No. It was Quinn on the subway. There was also a killer on the subway because you see the killer in the costume moving towards her and him in the same shot.
Oh, I didn't remember. Yeah. Whatever. Okay. So, but I think what I said still stands.
Yeah.
She meant to kill her and sucks at killing.
Sucks at killing. Okay. Well, there you go. Well, she also didn't do a very good job of trying to kill Gale. So I guess you got a point there. She was not very good at her job of all of the
killers. I have to say, like, okay, I feel bad for Gale's boyfriend. Poor guy.
Oh, no.
Doesn't even get a name.
Talk about a regular meat sack. Holy smokes, man.
But I love that she put him on hold. Why did he have to wait 6 movies for that to happen? That was so funny.
Put you on hold for a second and then calls the, does
wait,
the redial.
That was probably the smartest move in the entire movie.
Oh, no, but I will
so
say this.
Good.
For a film that doesn't have anything to say in a very frustrating way, again, I liked almost all of the set pieces. Like, just,
I'm saying
mechanical construction. This is a very well-made,
they
like,
know
when
what
you
they're
get
doing
to the scare scenes, it looks great and it plays great for a theater.
The whole Gale thing, I think, when he was attacking her in her apartment, that really upset me. It's like, you have survived 5 movies of this crap.
Yeah.
As someone coming after you.
Yeah.
You have a gun. You know how to use it. What the fuck are you doing wandering around your apartment?
Hey, but I love
you lock yourself in a room, you point the gun at the door, and you wait.
Yeah.
And that's how you survive.
Occasionally sleep.
Don't sleep until the cops get there. And even then, because it turns out the cops were evil. But it's like the chase looked great. The calling on the phone was fantastic.
Yeah.
As you say, I loved the whole struggle inside the apartment. Right? The whole struggle inside the apartment played really well.
Yep.
Right? Like
the ladder crossing was great.
The ladder crossing, magnificent. I even liked
that was good. I loved The attack in the smaller apartment in their apartment, I thought that was really
good.
And
was
again,
intense.
Because you had this like very claustrophobic feeling because it's a tiny little New York apartment, but at the same time, there's all this chaos going on. Like, that was really well done.
Yeah.
And it was, it was fast and furious. It wasn't like this, you know, menacing stalker who just kind of trudges his way toward his prey. I mean,
there's no room for that.
I know. It was just this frantic.
It's got five rooms.
Everyone's two steps away.
Yeah, it was a frantic, confusing mess. And I really loved that scene as a result. And I thought that was very effective. And I even liked, you know, the chase through the theater at the end of the movie, even while it got kind of confusing and convoluted, the
I
geography.
Didn't know where
of.
The but again, hell they were.
The geography
like,
got bad.
Talk about your geography tease.
Yeah.
But again, there is no need to even say it was in New York. I mean, if you're going to say New York, great, then use at least some exterior locales there. But
reason why it's in New York is for the subway. Lots of cities have subways.
Yeah, exactly.
They could all be in Philadelphia. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
They could have all gone to Montreal. There. Yeah,
that's exactly what I was thinking.
Although it's a little hard to justify a cop.
Yeah,
scream international. Right? Although it's kind of hard to get transferred from an American police force to Montreal's police force. Dude would have to learn French and be a big mess.
Well, then, you know what? You go to Toronto.
There you go. You go to Toronto. Although then Gail has to move to Toronto. It's a whole thing.
Yeah.
Right. Although she could have been staying locally. You know, who knows? There's ways to write around this is what I'm saying. But yeah, it's a frustrating movie in a ton of ways because it's like there were problems with the fifth one, but making it about like fan culture regarding films was a really interesting take for a long-running franchise like Scream.
Yep.
And asking, well, what is a franchise when it starts moving out, when it stops being just about the characters. Again, there was a Scream TV show. Comment on that. Comment on how Scream
is
bigger than Woodsboro now, and it's bigger than Sydney now. The loss of Sydney could be a jumping off point, but they still have to stay, you know, connected to Woodsboro and Sydney and Billy Loomis's daughter.
And again, it comes back to what I said at like this front, the start of the movie, took it out of Woodsboro.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
No, you're right. I think there's a way to do this movie better, and maybe they'll figure it out in time for Scream 7. I don't know how this movie's doing. I don't know if there's going to be a Scream 7, but it will
it's
be
all set
very
for it.
Interesting
that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah, no, it really
that's
is.
True.
Yeah, you know, they're ready to go.
Yep.
That said, I do enjoy New Dewey. I think he's very entertaining. Chad, the new Dewey.
Oh, Chad.
I like him. I think he's fun.
Yeah, Chad's fine. I got no problems with
He's
that.
Always been fun. Yeah. His sister is deeply annoying, and I hate every one of her opinions about movies, but he's a lot of fun.
My fear, then tell me if you follow along, but the way that they continually bring up Billy Loomis, and we get to see Skeet Ulrich yet again.
Yeah.
In reflection and heavily de-aged. I'm afraid that they're going to they're lurching toward having not the one girl but her sister Jenny Ortega's character be the overall killer.
Damn.
I was a little I got
I can
that
see
impression
that.
Too.
Because she's just so sick of her sister ruining her life with all the drama and helicoptering and so on and so forth.
And that's going to be
I don't
a
know.
Big twist.
At the end of the movie, they have a sort of.
Yeah. They try to, have them come to, you're right. They do the heart to heart when she has to let her sister go metaphorically and literally.
Oh my God.
I know that was a bit much.
Oh, that was horrible.
And by the way, by a bit much, I mean way too much.
Let me go
we
so I
it.
Can fall down on this man below me and
I will also, get stabbed, but then I'll also stab.
And metaphorically,
metaphorically, it'll help our relationship because you allowed me to be my own murderer. Person, my own person. God. But yeah, no, it's frustrating and they might honestly go that way because like it would be the only twist they have because every single element of these two movies is get it. Sam's going to start killing people. Her dad's a killer, so she's going to start killing people. She's going to start killing. Right. It's like the only twist you can have is, no, her sister starts killing people.
Yeah, because they refuse to actually be a franchise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very frustrating.
So where else are you going to go?
But yet, the Scream 5 followed, you know, exactly how the original Scream was. Scream 6 is now Scream 2, and Scream 3, you could see it. I mean, sibling.
Honestly, they could be a sibling. It was a sibling last time.
That's what I'm saying.
It'd be a sibling next time, and it'd be about the movie that they're making about these four people based on Gale's new book.
So like Stab 8 or 9? How many Stab movies are there?
There were 8 Stab movies, I believe, and we don't know if they've made any Stab movies since Stab 4. Since Scream 4.
Scream 4.
This is so hard to talk about because remember, there were 7 Stab movies and then they made the 8th one and it was a reboot and Rian Johnson made it and everyone was pissed off.
That's
right. And that's the point of Scream 5. We don't know if they've continued to make any more Stab movies afterwards.
I gotta say though, I kind of want a Stab t-shirt.
I want a t-shirt with new Ghostface who wears a steel mask and has a flamethrower on it.
Right.
Rian Johnson mixing things up. Oh my god. But yeah, like I'm not saying I'm not going to be there for Scream 7, but it's like,
yeah,
you've got to find a way to actually say something about the franchise, or there's no reason to make a Scream 7.
Anyway, I might be done saying anything at all. This movie had nothing to say. And I know I just spent like the last half hour or whatever dunking on it. I did enjoy watching this movie.
But that was my point. It's fun to watch.
Yeah.
It is.
All said, there's masterful set pieces. They really know how to build tension and ring it out in the scene, but they just can't connect it all together.
I know. I got my money's worth, although someone did pay for me to go, so that doesn't really count.
I feel like this was a standalone.
Got their money's worth.
I got their money's worth.
Don't you feel like, though, if this was a standalone and it had no connective tissue to that, this would be a really effective little city slasher.
Yeah. If this was, you know, someone had made a movie in the vein of, you know, the New York Ripper like this.
Right.
Then,
right. Exactly.
I would have had a good time. It's only because we expect more from Scream that we're being so hard on this.
I feel like they're torn between, you know, their genetics and wanting to break the mold, too. But they feel tethered to this legacy that
like
they have
to raise a kid.
Yeah, they have to they have to Palpatine everything, you know.
Cut the apron strings.
It's like the Skywalker legacy.
I'll say that. You know, that's what Scream the TV show did. And I should probably go watch that third season and see what they did with it. I was just really pissed off because they announced that the third, like, they set up a cliffhanger at the end of season 2. And then season 3, they're like, actually, we're just hitting the reboot button and we're never going to resolve that cliffhanger.
Season 2? I feel like I ducked out of that one.
You might have.
Because we watched the first season.
We did, yeah.
And then I don't actually have any memories of season 2. I've watched a lot of other stuff since then, so maybe it just got overwritten.
Season 2 had its problems. I called the killer pretty quickly. Had a masterful sequence where everybody gets high and it becomes widescreen. So it starts at 69 and it becomes 2, 3, 5. And at one point, someone like grabs a hold of and like turns the 2, 3, 5 bar. showing that somebody's gotten high and I'm like, and reality is warping for them, and I'm like, yes, boom, cinematography, you did something really fantastic this episode. Then it's got like I'm not going to spoil it for people who haven't watched it, but it's like, I just want to say that the main character is so insufferable that I wanted the killer to win, and that's never happened anywhere in this franchise before. But literally I got to the end of the show and I'm like, can the killer just win, please? I like the killer so much more than the hero. I know that's not the reaction I was supposed to have, but it's like, she is the worst.
Oh, no.
Like, she is like, it's like Sky from Heroes, just the worst. So yeah, that's what I wanted to say. All right, but anyway, so yeah, that was Scream 6. They're out there trying something, and hopefully they'll try harder next time. Do you have any narcissism to watch?
Not me, no.
Rob?
Yeah, I've got a few new films up there from South by Southwest up on filmthreat.com.
Exciting. I can't wait to find out more about that. For me, obviously, drop by the Hidden Object Guru channel for more stuff about this Switchback game, which is a delight. And over at Profiling Criminal Minds, we're going to be starting to watch Cracker, because we finished watching Wire in the Blood, which means it's time to start watching Cracker, the Robbie Coltrane cop show masterpiece.
Right. Are you ever going to watch Profiler?
There's like 100 episodes of Profiler.
Really?
Yeah, it went for like 5 seasons.
So?
All right, I guess I'll watch Profiler.
Yeah.
I kind of have to, I mean...
Right.
Just catch COVID for a couple weeks and just, you know, chill out. There you go.
Mainline all of Profiler. All right, I'm going to go find out if Profiler is on one of my streaming services. Expect news back about this soon. All right. I guess that's that. So, is there any... I spaced there for a second because I just looked down the barrel of like 80 hours of watching Profiler. And it took my breath away. So is there any other way to get in touch with us?
You can visit the Ava's blog at theava.com. You can stream old episodes there. And leave us a comment and tell us what part of Scream 6 really upset you. You can send us an email at theava@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. If you're listening on an app, write a review, subscribe. Oh, no more beer for me.
I'm going to encourage you to do all of those things. So until next time, I've been Cam Vargelon.
I've been Dio.
I've been Jamie Kennedy's stepbrother from a different mother.
Thanks for watching, and have yourselves a great evening.
Good night.